Who is your daddy?
I am your father.
You fathers will understand.
My father taught me many things.
I got an idea. How about you all sit there quietly while I make dad noises?
Welcome to episode 8 of Fathers of the Grind. Thank you guys for joining us yet again. I'm here with my friend and colleague, cohort and co-host, Derek Teague.
Welcome!
Oh no, don't do that.
Oh. Don't. Is that, am I on the wrong show?
You're on the wrong show, yeah. Okay. Yeah, sorry. I want to give a quick shout out to our friend and I think listener. He's definitely a friend of ours in these communities that we're involved in. That is Mark Allen, our Scottish friend who, I know two things for sure about Mark. I know that he loves Final Fantasy,
yes,
and he loves football. Those are two things that I know for sure that Mark loves. So shout out to Mark. He was a little sad he didn't get one yet, so there you go, buddy. And hey, Mark, maybe make a recording of yourself, maybe just talking about whatever, how awesome me and Derek are, you know, whatever, just from the heart, you know, and then we can put it on the show. Everyone wants to hear your awesome, awesome Scottish accent. So
yeah, that's
do
true.
That. That'd be great.
Yeah, I'm still waiting for the screaming videos that I requested.
Yeah, I think there might be a few coming your way. we're going to kick things off with a segment we had last week. We're not going to do this every week, but we had some more responses. So this is our segment called Listen.
Hey, listen.
So what we're going to do is I had several people reach out about this Toys to Life conversation we had last week about the collectible toys you can buy, put them on this platform, scan them into a game, whether or not some of us use them with our kids or not. Some of you, like Derek, just collect them for yourself.
Sure.
And others like Bobby, Frank, your brother James, and a few others chimed in on the Toys to Life conversation. Here's a summary. Instead of reading all the responses that came in, I got a few tweets, I got a few comments, and I got a couple messages to our inbox. The summary is this. You can use, for Disney Infinity, any portal, and the old characters do carry over to the next games, to the new games. What does not carry over, what does not work, is if you have the 3.0 characters and you want to use them in the 1.0 or 2.0 game,
oh, okay.
You can't use them in the older games. But the portals do carry over and the older characters do carry over. So I think that's pretty accurate summary from Frank Clark, James Teague, or his other name, or Bobby Pauls, and a few others.
James
so,
the prick.
There Teague. It is. There it is.
By
the way, I want to say about Bobby. Bobby Pauls hosts a show called The Geek Cast. And he is at the Geeks Guru. Is it the Geek Gurus? The Geek Gurus,
yeah.
On Twitter. So throw him a follow and check out his podcast, The Geek Cast. And he does a great job, especially covering Nintendo, although they do cover everything. Those guys talk a lot of Nintendo, so check those guys
yeah,
out.
Yeah, he's a great guy. He likes to yell at me when I make mistakes as well. So I respect that. I was going to say, just for you personally, since you were kind of interested in getting into the Disney Infinity but didn't want to spend a lot of money.
That's it.
With this information,
mm-hmm.
I would suggest you do what Frank said and buy an old portal. You
mm-hmm.
can probably get one real cheap on Amazon or eBay or something like that.
Right.
And right now, on this week's sales for PlayStation 4, PlayStation Network, you can buy Disney Infinity, I believe it's 3.0, for $12.
For $12?
Yeah.
Really?
It's one of the games that's on sale. And if I'm wrong, oh my gosh, I'm not even going to ask y'all to yell at me. I've been yelling at me, but I'm pretty sure I saw it earlier.
Well, what you can do is if they go and they check it out, when they listen to this, you can tell them, well, it was on sale when I told Tim about it. It just
yeah.
It must have gone off sale by the time you guys checked. That
totally
can be your, that's your backup plan.
I think that's what I'm.
All right, well, I can check into that. I am quite interested, and after hearing not only you talk about it last week, but several others talk about it and chime in on it, it does make me very interested. And I'll tell you what, I think it's something that our kids would love. I know that all of our boys, especially my older two boys, they love Pokemon, so they love collecting digitally all their little monsters to train and that kind of thing. So just imagine how much they would love having actual figures, actual characters to collect and then use in a game somehow. And I'm not saying they play like a Pokemon game, but I'm just saying that aspect of collecting and using, I could totally see them getting into that. So, all right, I'll keep you guys up to date if we jump into the Toys to Life world.
If you hear me clicking, it's because I'm going to look right now so I don't get yelled at.
All
right,
that's fair.
Because I'm pretty sure it's on sale. Right
that's
now.
Fair. All right, well, guys, as a reminder, thank you again for writing in, for sending us your tweets, your messages, your comments on our posts, or sending us an email. You can always do that at fathersofthegrind@gmail.com, or you can find me on Twitter at @Tim_Nestor. And we'd love to hear from you, get your ideas, your thoughts, your criticisms, if you need to yell at one of us for something we said wrong, or if you just want to chime in, if you want to add a topic idea, we'd love to hear from you. So feel free to send us a message, even if it's nothing to do with what we've talked about. Maybe it's something else, gaming or family related. We'd love to hear from you. So be sure to do that. fathersofthegrind@gmail.com. Did you find the sale?
I can confirm Disney Infinity 3.0 edition, full game, PlayStation 4, $11.99.
Oh my goodness. How long? That game's pretty new, right?
I really think you should. Yes, it is. It's probably like 6 months old. I would highly suggest you just go ahead and.
How much are those games on release? Are they a $40 game usually?
They're usually, I think it's like $75 for a starter pack.
But I mean, if you just wanted to buy that game normally digitally, how much would that just the software be?
I think it's 60.
Oh, really?
I think it is. Day one, $60.
So what is that? That's like an 80% off sale or something? Wow. Yeah. Wow. Okay.
Well, you know, it said it's 60% off. So
60% off. Okay. So that means, so that means it's normally in that 40 range.
Yeah. That's, so they that's might great. Consider the game 40 and then the extra stuff they give.
Actually,
you
no, 30, that's 35. 20, 25 range, whatever. Bad math. No one, don't listen to us, okay? We're not here for a math podcast, all right?
That is true. I didn't even pay attention to that. You're way off.
That was off. That was horrible. You work at a bank, too. You should have caught that sooner. All right.
No.
Here's what I want to do. I want to try to stump you with a couple of things. We're going to move into a new little segment we're calling Guess That Game. And I like some of the games that I hear on other podcasts. One in particular is on GameScoop, when Damon Hatfield from IGN has his guests go through a series of 20 questions to try to guess the game that they have. And so what I want to do is, instead of doing a 20 questions type game, we will instead read the Wikipedia description of a game, and we're going to edit it, kind of leave out a few key factors like the developer or maybe the year it was released. We'll remove a few obvious clues and see if the other person can guess what game it is based on the Wikipedia description. So let me do the first one to kind of give you an idea of what I'm talking about, and then I hope you've got a couple for me. We can see if we can stump each other on guessing that game.
Okay.
All right. Are you ready?
Yeah, I'll probably fail, but I'm ready.
Here comes your first one. There's a few clues that I took out that would totally give it away. Just for this first one, I'll try to be nice about it. I'll read it to you. If you get it wrong, I'll probably add in a few clues, see if you can't guess it.
Okay.
All right, here we go. A science fiction action-adventure video game. That's your first clue. It chronicles the missions of a space-faring bounty hunter who protects the galaxy from the depredations of the space pirates. It combines platforming and exploration with a decidedly darker atmosphere and a greater emphasis on non-linear gameplay.
Jack and Daxter?
Not Jack and Daxter. Not Jack and Daxter.
I don't know. You said platformer.
It's platformer,
like
and it's primarily side-scrolling, although there have been entries in this series of games that are not 2D side-scrolling.
Okay, what platform do these games normally come out on?
This is developed and published by Nintendo.
Okay, so it's a space traveler?
Science fiction, space-faring bounty hunter, fighting against space pirates at times, platforming, exploration, non-linear.
Metroid?
There you go. Nailed it.
I'm going to get in trouble for that, but just so people know, I don't play Metroid games, so.
Dude, you shouldn't have said that. You should have just said, I should have gotten it, and then moved on. But now people know yet another franchise that you have just taken a dump on. Oh, boy.
Metroid can suck it.
Oh, my goodness. Dude, sometimes you give me actual heartburn when you talk about these games that you don't play. Like, my chest hurts because I just can't handle it.
Yep.
All right. Do you have a description you want to read for me, see if I can guess it?
Yeah, I think I'm going to start off with what I would consider an easier one. Which
That's what I did,
think,
so we'll
yeah.
see how it goes.
Yeah. Blank follows the story of the Wuxia genre within a mythical setting inspired by Imperial China. The player character, who can be either male or female, progresses through an adventure based on traditional martial arts and can discover and develop new fighting styles. Combat is not turn-based, but it is real-time, granting players control over how and when characters dodge or attack.
I'm going to go with Jade Empire.
Correct.
You know, you know what's really funny about that? That was the second one that I picked.
Oh, yeah? So I'll get that one. Go ahead and read Jade Empire.
Let me read this one for you. Don't guess it yet. It's the exact same thing you just read, basically. All right, so failure on my second one. I actually had a description of Jade Empire, knowing it's one that you liked. I was hoping it would... Whatever. Great minds think alike. All right, here we go. Here's my next one. An action-adventure platform video game. The story is a reimagining... This is the one that's a reimagining of the novel Journey to the West. So, unlike the original story that was set in a fantastical version of ancient China, this game is set 150 years in the future, following a global war, with only remnants of humanity left.
Enslaved.
Whoa. How'd you know that?
Because I love Enslaved.
Me too. Me too. So,
see, now, I mean, I didn't have that, like, memorized, but I do remember, I think, when the game launched, them talking about it being inspired by that game, and that's what made me think of Enslaved, because Enslaved's all about a journey to the West.
Yep, it's very cool. And for those of you who didn't know, the actor Andy Serkis, who plays Gollum, he does the movement and the voice, I think, for Caesar from Dawn of the Apes. He is in this game. He's the main character, and he actually does a couple other voices too. So yeah, he was one of the main driving forces behind the performances in Enslaved, which is pretty awesome. All right, so you just nailed those. You stole what turned out to be my third game. You nailed Enslaved before I could even finish it. You never played Metroid though, so I'm going to give you a solid 2 out of 3 for your answers. 2 out of 3 is not bad. All right, so you got two more for me, so let's hear them.
I have two more. Now, I think these two will be a little bit more difficult.
Okay.
All right, so here we go. The game is mostly played in real time, controlling one character at a time. When the party has multiple characters, the player can switch between them and unleash a powerful ability unique to each character known as Skill Strikes and Spirit Strikes. The combat system is relatively complex for an action RPG, so you know what type of game it is, as it utilizes various button combos based on time button presses, similar to some fighting games. Out of the four characters, half are melee and the other half are ranged. This results in some combat to be played as a first-person shooter.
That, as soon as I heard that, some combat's first-person, that changed what my guess was going to be.
What was your original guess? I won't... I mean, if it's right, I'll say right. But it won't count as your guess.
All
right,
so it's an action RPG. Well, at first, I was leaning, as you were describing it, I was leaning towards Final Fantasy XII, the way you were describing the battle system.
Oh, okay.
All right, let me think here. So it's action RPG. You got four characters, two ranged, two melee. Mm-hmm. Okay, I'm just going to have to take a stab at something so we don't take too much time doing this. Let's go with an RPG that I haven't really played much, so it's kind of a stab in the dark. Is it Star Ocean?
No.
No, no. Okay. All right.
Let me give you some hints.
Yeah.
It came out on the original Xbox and Microsoft Windows. So it never hit a PlayStation console. It never was on a Nintendo console. It's an RPG. It's more of a Western RPG that looks like a JRPG.
Okay.
It's also a game I probably have talked about because it's one of my favorite original
Xbox. It's original Xbox, right? Not 360. Okay. Another one that when you were talking about it, I was considering was Lost Odyssey, but I think that was turn-based. So it can't be that one.
And that's 360.
And that's 360. That's not original Xbox.
I'll count down from 5, 4, 3.
Oh, gosh.
2, 1. Sudokai. You ever heard of Sudokai?
No. No, I haven't. Sudokai?
Really? Yeah, it was a... I remember when it came out, it was an Xbox exclusive.
Yeah, yeah.
I was really hyped for it. It reviewed okay. In fact, well, actually, it did a little bit better than okay. It was a 72 out of 100 on Metacritic.
Sudokai. Wow. Oh, okay, I just looked it up.
It's
still fun to play. It rings a bell the way it's spelled, but I don't think I ever played it.
Huh. It's either Sudokai or Sudeki, however you want to say it, but I think Sudokai is...
Looks pretty cool, though.
Yeah.
Yeah, never did
play. All right, last one. This one I think is going to be the hardest.
By the way, two other ones that ran through my head as you were describing them. One of them was Knights of the Old Republic, but I thought he wouldn't do another BioWare game, and the things you were describing didn't sound like my experience with Knights of the Old Republic. So, and then I thought of something like a Dragon Age. I was trying to think of action RPGs where you switch between characters, but it's kind of turn. It's not turn-based, but it's also you have some strategy. Then I thought Mass Effect, but then you don't have four characters in that same way. Like, so anyway, my mind is bouncing all over basically BioWare.
So basically, I could have probably fooled Jared Petty as well.
Maybe. He would have gotten it. He would have nailed it.
He probably would, because it's on both platforms.
He would have guessed, at first, his first guess would have been some random arcade cabinet game from 1978, and then he would have guessed it on the second try.
All right, last one, and I, again, think this one will be the hardest.
Oh, great.
Blank is set in the year 2219, where Blitz is the world's most popular sport. Players attempt to toss a disc through a hoop while avoiding full contact from their opponents, including punches, kicks, throws, and stomps. Like a futuristic rugby, the sport combines elements of hockey, basketball, and full contact American football.
All right, so it's a sports game. It's not Blitzball, so it's not Final Fantasy X.
Nope.
And it's called Blitz. The game they play is called Blitz?
Yeah.
Blitz is the most famous sports. Gosh.
Game is super freaking fun. I probably put more time in this game than any other Xbox game.
Really?
Okay. Yeah. So you know it's an Xbox.
Yeah, you just gave that part away. I'm just going to take a stab at it here. Let's go with... I can't even think of extreme sports games. It's not NFL Blitz. I'm just going to put out NFL Blitz because I got to guess something. And I know it's not...
Fault. Man, you're terrible.
Give me another hint, because that none of those ring any bells.
Let's see.
You already said it's on Xbox.
Yeah, it's on Xbox. It came out in 2002. It was developed or published by Ubisoft.
It's a sports game.
Yeah.
It's an extreme sports game in the future.
Yeah, where you can beat the crap out of people. You can actually win a match by just beating everybody up to the point where they can't get up. So you could be losing 3-0 in the match and beat everybody up and you win the match.
Holy smokes. That doesn't ring any bells whatsoever. I'm going to have to give up again. I'm going to have to be 1-3.
You're terrible. Yeah. Death Row.
Death Row. Never played Death Row.
Such a good game.
Is it?
I love that game. I can still play it now. Me and my two buddies, Nate and David, we would just sit there and play it for hours. We could play it 12 hours straight. It's so good. And it's very challenging. So even when you're playing co-op, it's never guaranteed that you could win it all.
Okay. So Sudokai and Death Row. Those are two. Was it Death Row?
Yes, Death Row.
All right. All right, I've got one more for you since I lost my Jade Empire one.
Ooh, what?
I've got one more. I've got a third one for you here. So far you've gotten, technically you've gotten the two. Because you even guessed Metroid on your second try. Let's see if you can go 3-3. All right, this game is a puzzle platformer. The objective is to guide a group of blank through a number of obstacles to a designated exit. You have to save a required number to win. You can assign each of them a set of different specific skills to help them guide the others to the exit. I'll try not to give away too much here. Clear obstacles using the different skills and create a safe passage for blank. It's hard not to give away the name of it without cutting some words out. Puzzle platformer, where you're trying to guide them to a certain exit using a set of designated skills.
Jeez Louise. You and your stupid platforming games.
I do love a good platformer.
This is not going to be the answer, but it's the only thing coming to my brain. Portal.
Not Portal. Nope. It was originally released on the PC back in the early 90s.
Oh, wow.
Let's see if I can say a little more about it without giving away the actual name of the game. Let's see. So it's a point-and-click thing. So you select a skill, and then you select one of your little things that you're trying to guide, and then they will then perform that skill. So it's very timing-based. It's very kind of management-based. I know you love management games. But once you assign a skill, then whatever they're doing should help the rest of your crew get to the exit. You usually have some kind of time limit at the very least, you have to, you know, complete it before they all die some horrible death.
Yeah, I have no clue.
It's kind of, I think, was the inspiration for something like Mario March of the Minis, like the Mario vs. Donkey Kong games. Do you ever play those on DS, 3DS?
Okay, could it be like Earthworm? Or not Earthworm, but Worms? Or what's like...
You know what? The visual style of it and the way the levels look is very much like Worms. And the way the levels get destroyed, very much like Worms. But you're not using any weapons. Mm-hmm. But very much looks like that. It's a little game called Lemmings.
Played that too.
Yeah, you kind of look like Worms, actually. You got little green hair and little blue outfits.
Yeah, I used to play that on PC with my cousin. Dang.
Yeah, it's actually a surprisingly fun little game. I think they just put it out. It's coming out as one of the PS Plus games this month on the Vita.
Sounds like one I'll ask for a refund.
So anyway, Lemmings, a great little PC game. Yeah, there you go. I had to stump you with something. And I didn't want to be too hard, but
I mean, you got me, but still, I technically won.
You did, yeah. You picked some tough ones, but some good ones. Those were legit games that I never owned the original Xbox, so you got me where it hurt. If you would have picked pretty much any Nintendo system or maybe the 360 or handheld, I probably would have nailed it. But yeah, the Xbox, the original Xbox, is my biggest weak spot.
Well, I knew you were a Sony pony, so I wanted to attack that weakness.
Yep, that's why they pay me so much money.
Sony pony.
All right, so we'll try some additional type of trivia type games in the future. Again, if you guys have suggestions on those, or if you want to try to stump us with some kind of a set of trivia questions, feel free to let me know. And or if you want to try to stump one of us and maybe send the other one a set of questions or maybe a game to guess, feel free to do that. And then whether you send it to Derek to try to stump me, which is obviously pretty easy, or if you want to send it to me and I'll try to stump Derek, which is a little harder, feel free to do so. All right.
Unless
so Derek.
It's Lemmings.
It's Lemmings. That's right. Tell me what you're playing right now. What are you gaming?
Well, last week's show, we were all excited about Fire Emblem Fates, so I definitely dove into that. I'm actually in chapter 12, but I haven't played it in a few days. Chapter 12 of Birthright. It's lived up to the expectations that I had for this game, which I obviously, mm-hmm. I think you and I both kind of hyped it, so we both
a little bit.
Yeah, I think we had high expectations. So far, it's exceeded it in my opinion. I can't, like, if somebody, I actually, people have asked, like, I think Dan Phillips was wanting to know, hey, should I get Awakening or should I jump into Fates? And to be honest, if somebody asked me, like, which is better, it's pretty much impossible at this point for me to tell you which is better. Like, the only thing I can tell you is to go get them all. So it's really that good, because I really loved Awakening, and so far Birthright has lived up to that. And the great part about that is I've actually heard, you know, through reviews and just reading other people's opinions, that Birthright is actually the weakest of the three games when it comes to story. So I imagine once I get to Conquest and Revelations that I'll even enjoy it a little bit more. Nice. So I've been playing that. I jumped back into Fallout 4, which I said I was going to do. Did I say that on the show? If I didn't, I'm saying it now. I had an itch to play Fallout 4, so I decided to jump back into it. I had gotten where I'd played 10 hours on my Xbox One, and I had lost a couple hours, so I was really technically only 8 hours into the game.
Oh, okay.
But I just decided to go ahead and jump back into that game. I didn't start over or anything. And I played a couple hours, and I feel like I have that itch, so the desire to play that type of game is there. So I think, I'm just saying think, I don't know for sure, I will lock in and push through the main campaign. Another reason why I wanted to play Fallout 4 is I'm really considering the DLC at $30 instead of $50.
Oh, that changes here so in a couple days.
Yeah. So I wanted to jump back in and see, well, do I really want the DLC? Meaning, this is like my third time trying to jump back into Fallout 4. So if I don't get hooked here, which I think I will, but if I don't, and I don't really lock in and want to play it, then there's no point buying it at $30, $20, $10. like the DLC is pointless.
Right.
But if I do enjoy it and find that I'm really having fun, one of the DLC or expansions sounds really interesting. So I actually am considering buying that before March 1st.
Awesome. Nice.
Well,
it's cool to see. It's cool to hear you getting back into a game that both of us admittedly had tried and it really didn't hook us for a variety of reasons. You know, other games, just timing, the type of game that it is. But I'm kind of jealous that you got that itch and now you're jumping into it and kind of enjoying it because I want to and I'm just not in that place yet.
And that's how it usually works. I mean, I've shared my stories on some games. Some games, you know, you just don't like them at first or you just don't get into them. I say never give up on them unless you absolutely hate a game. Because I believe...
Which is not the case with Fallout 4.
No, I never walked away from it going, I hate this game. I just went away from it going, okay, well, at the time, Rise of the Tomb Raider was the better option. That was the game I wanted to play. And then there's been other games that have come out. But it's nice to jump back into it. I really like it. I think I'll sink my teeth into it. And then also, I jumped in and played a little bit of Far Cry Primal. Not far at all, because I haven't had time.
Yeah, you just wanted to try it out.
But I wanted to see if I liked it. And so far, I do. I like the tone. And I was a little worried, to be honest with you, and that's why I didn't buy it, is because I'm not really into the hunting parts of Far Cry. It's not that I hate it. I know you, and I'll let you talk about it, like to like get your bow out, and I'm guessing you stealth and kill them, and you like to do that. I don't. What I do is I buy like the most powerful gun in the game as soon as possible, and then I just go through and just start shooting up all animals.
This is that death row influence coming back, huh?
Exactly. I'm like, I don't care about stealth. I don't care about sneaking. I just want to kill. And so that was why I was worried about Far Cry Primal, because I'm like, you can't play that game like that at all. I mean, you're a caveman, so you don't have machine guns. But just a little bit I played, I've enjoyed it. I also completed my 4 in February, so
hooray!
I will read off the list that I completed. We've talked about most of the games, but I will talk about one in particular. The ones that I had previously completed were Tales from the Borderlands, Borderlands the Pre-Sequel, and Resident Evil Remastered. I've talked about them enough. I'm moving on.
Mm-hmm.
The fourth one that I needed to finish in the 4 in February was Telltale's Game of Thrones. Now, this is a game... Let me first of all say that I really like the show. I've never read the Game of Thrones books, but I love the show. I was immediately interested in it when it was announced, and then obviously when it released, I bought it as well. Well, I bought the first episode. I ended up buying the season pass through the collection, Telltale Collection. But I played the first episode and enjoyed it. I wouldn't say I was hooked, but I liked it. I forced myself through the second episode, and then I went through like this mini phase where I was like, I just don't want to play Telltale games. Telltale games are kind of like TV for me. So if you're not in the mood for just sitting there and listening to dialogue or something like that, and sometimes I fall asleep doing that stuff, then I just don't want to play those games. And that's the rut I got into. So I finally...
You wanted a different kind of game, you know?
Yeah, and I've kind of gotten out of that rut because in the last month, really... month and a half, I've completed Tales from the Borderlands, Game of Thrones, and then Life is Strange. And all three of those games play exactly the same.
Yes, they do. And they're episodic, and they're story-based with decisions. Yeah,
yep. Exactly. And then I've got Firewatch, which I should be playing as well. That is kind of similar. Not episodic, but it's story-based, story-driven, kind of a walking-type simulator. But anyway, so Game of Thrones, let me talk about this real quick, and I'll make it quick. Absolutely amazing. It's my favorite Telltale's game. It blew away all the rest. As I kept playing through it, I absolutely loved what was happening. Even if some of it became a little predictable, the way it executed was awesome. I really felt the weight of my decisions. I'm not going to go into spoilers, but there was a specific character where I totally screwed up on a few of my decisions, And I realized it after I did it, and it was one of those things like, is there a rewind button? Can I go back?
Oh, yeah.
I can't believe I just said that. I can't believe I just did that.
Right. And the Life is Strange kind of spoils us with the rewind thing, don't they?
Yeah, absolutely. And then the consequences to my dumb decisions were huge. So,
oh, that's cool, though. That's cool.
Yeah, exactly. So it's one of those where it's like you screwed up, you knew you screwed up, and then when it played out, you're like, well, I'm kind of satisfied with the way it played out just because I know my screw-up cost this person dearly.
Wow, that's crazy.
So it's a really good game, in my opinion, and I was kind of surprised to see a lot of people like it, so I'm not going to sit here and say people didn't love it, but there was a lot of negativity about the Game of Thrones one. I always hear positive feedback about Tales from the Borderlands, The Walking Dead, at least Season 1, and The Wolf Among Us, but Game of Thrones and Season 2 of The Walking Dead, they kind of get a little bit of hate, so I wasn't expecting much, so when I finished it, I was pleasantly surprised with how good it was.
That's awesome. You're kind of selling me on jumping into it. I think I bought the season pass for that when it was on sale, mm-hmm. I want to say around Christmas time, or maybe it was Thanksgiving. Sometime later in the year, they had some kind of sale where it was in the $5, $6 range, I want to say. And so yeah. I grabbed the season pass. But I knew I was kind of in the same position as you in that I wasn't really into the episodic games at the time. So right now I've got, you know, Tales from the Borderlands, Game of Thrones. I've got those sitting there ready to play. I'm excited to play them. Just haven't done it yet. So, but you're kind of, you're convincing me, though, that Game of Thrones is the one to go with first. I feel like that's more in my interest level.
I don't know. I mean, you and I are similar, but we're also really different. So,
that was deep. That was deep.
Yeah, that was really deep. But I could see you being the type that would be like, Game of Thrones was okay. Tales from the Borderlands, phenomenal.
Well, here's why I know I'm going to really like Game of Thrones. I'm a pretty big Game of Thrones fan. Like, I've been watching the show when it first came out. So here's what happened. When it first episode of the first season, our twins had just been born. And so my wife and I were taking turns basically being up all night trying to make sure that they were fed and taken care of. And so we were taking turns, taking shifts with the twins as newborn infants. And that's when the first season of Game of Thrones came out. So I watched the first episode. And then as soon as that first episode ended, I right away went and got the first book.
Yeah.
So I started reading the first book while watching the first season. Loved them both. Very different in a lot of ways, but I really liked them both. And then I flew through all five books. Just flew right through them. And those books are amazing. I can't say enough about them. I can't wait for the next book. And I've been watching each season as each episode rolls out. I absolutely love everything about Game of Thrones. It's dark. It's terrifying. It's amazing. The characters are great. So that being said, I'm convinced I'm going to enjoy this. I just, when I had access to it, I wasn't really in a place where I wanted to play an episodic adventure style game. But I'm kind of there now after my Life is Strange run, which I'll talk about in a minute. But I'm kind of there now. So I think Game of Thrones, when I do decide I'm going to play another one of these episodic games, that's going to be the next one up for me. So, and you kind of convinced me of that just now, too. You kind of confirmed that that's the good choice because I already love that franchise. And if the game is really that good and the decisions have that big of an impact, then, yeah, I'm excited to play it.
Yeah, I mean, part of me, and I won't because I got too many other games, part of me was like, yeah, I want to play this again and make completely different decisions because I really would like to see if they impacted as much as I think they did.
Yeah, cool. Well, good job on your four in February. You actually completed your backlog games like the four in February is supposed to be.
Yeah, I actually did it.
So congratulations.
And did it by following the rules.
Right, right.
Unlike a few dozen people in our group who have no idea how to do the correct thing.
Don't apply to everybody, Derek. Well, there's
maritime
laws or something like that.
I actually think I'm going to block anybody who didn't follow the rules, but...
That's a long list you got going there.
Well, you're first.
All right. I know. It's been a long time. All right, let me tell you what I've been playing before I talk about my 4 in February. I have been playing Far Cry Primal the last few nights. I've really, really enjoyed it. I think I'm three and a half hours in, something like that. Taken over a few areas. I'm starting to expand my village. I've done some story missions. Everyone keeps criticizing the narrative and the story for being simple, for being thin. And the more I'm looking at it, I'm like, look at the time period. Look at what these people are doing. What? There's no government set up. There's no, like, you know, back street, back alley deals, you know, trying to figure out some drug running, gun running. Like, there's no intricate, complex storyline. I mean, families, their number one concern is let's survive. Hey, let's not die today. Let's not be eaten by something. Let's not let these other warriors come in and stab us to death. Like, that's the number one concern.
What I was going to ask you, you know, being spoiler free, give me I know nothing about the story, only the 30 minutes I've played of the game or whatever I played.
Yeah.
So what's an overview of what you're doing? Like, why are you controlling who you're controlling? What are you doing?
So you are a character named Takar, and he's from the Wenja tribe, which has been pretty much eradicated from this land that you return to at the start of the game. So that's not really a spoiler. That's kind of different events lead you to heading back to this land of Oros. And your tribe's been mostly eradicated, or at least kind of spread out and are in hiding. And so you meet up with a few characters, and together you begin to rebuild your tribe. And you start to build up defenses. You start to go to recruit more powerful characters that can teach you skills. Everything from beast taming to better ways of hunting or finding resources. So there's all these side characters that will teach you additional skills and help those skills to grow and add to your skill tree as you level up. And so you're growing your village, which in turn helps improve your character by using the ability points you earn through fighting and through finishing missions. So to me, there's a nice progression system that fits with what is a pretty, I would not call it paper thin or bad story. I would call it a simple story, and I think that's probably for the best with a game like this. If you tried to convince me that there's all these intricate storylines and all this intrigue with these people who had maybe just discovered fire, for all we know, like, I don't really believe it.
Yeah.
So I'm glad that it really is truly a story based on survival, and it's a story based on loyalty to your tribe. And now you've got these two opposing tribes. There's one tribe in the north in the Ice Kingdoms. They're cannibals and they want to eat you. And then there's another tribe in the south. They basically like to do fire. They like to burn people alive, like to throw fire bombs at you.
Sweet.
And you got to get them out of there too. So those are the main two tribes. From what I've heard, it doesn't necessarily have the most satisfying ending in terms of a big dramatic story moment, but I've already had so many dramatic moments in playing the game. I don't know how much more dramatic I really want the story itself to be. I mean, it's intense just walking around that world. So I've already tamed a few pets. I've got a pet wolf. I've got a pet, I guess he's like a dingo, like the smaller dogs that can attack. And I just recently got some sort of a panther, some kind of jaguar looking cat who's pretty awesome. So I've been taming some beasts. I've been using my owl to scout out and mark enemies and dive bomb on enemies and take them out. I mean, there's just a lot of cool stuff they implement in this version of Far Cry, in this giant open world. It's a gorgeous game. I'm really enjoying it. I mean, I'm three and a half hours in, and just talking about it now, I'm ready to call the podcast and go play right now.
Yeah, I'm okay with you leaving. I mean, you don't add anything to the podcast anyway, so.
Oh, that's sweet of you. So yeah, I'm really enjoying it. I highly recommend it. If you guys haven't ever enjoyed really any kind of open world game, but specifically if you're a Far Cry fan, then I highly recommend it. There's lots of stealth and hunting that Derek talked about you can do, and I do enjoy that. But that's not, you don't have to do those things. I mean, there are certain missions that will require you to be sneaky or require you to hunt some kind of animal. But from what I can tell, you can run a lot of the main missions without doing too much of that extra stuff. So you've got some choices there, but I enjoy it. I love the hunting. I love sneaking around.
I'd like to give it a shot, like dive in a little bit deeper to see if I'd rather play that or stick with Fallout. But
well, for me, one of my favorite weapons in Far Cry 4 was the bow. I loved the bow. I upgraded that thing right away. I loved the explosive and flame arrows. I really liked that weapon. It was a great way to sneak in and take over forts. I loved that weapon for hunting and for combat. So this is a much more basic version of that so far, although I do think there are ways to upgrade it here in the near future. But Far Cry Primal, love it, recommend it. It's fantastic. All right, the other game that I'm playing, I'm alternating back and forth between these two. Actually, there's a third game, but these two are my primary ones. Far Cry Primal and Fire Emblem Fates on the 3DS. And it is, I kind of just have to copy what you said, Derek. It is meeting and exceeding my expectations. It is wonderful. I got Conquest, and I have the access to Birthright, thanks to my Best Buy purchase. But I chose to go the Conquest route first. And it is a more unique Fire Emblem experience in some ways, but for the most part, it still is that same awesome grid-based, turn-based strategy with great characters. I think the localization for the dialogue is quite good. There's a couple characters that have already made me laugh a little bit. There's a few scenes that have made me kind of feel really bad about the main decision I made there after chapter 6. So it's really, really good. I'm about the same number of chapters in as you are. I think I just got to chapter 11. Mm-hmm. I love the way you can build up your castle.
Yeah.
You know, I'm adding my buildings. I'm talking to characters as I'm in there. I'm feeding that little dragon lady to make her stronger for those defenses. I already defended my castle one time. It's just really, really fun. If you like turn-based strategy games, I can't recommend this enough. Yes, Awakening is great. And so far, my time with Fates, I've liked it just as much, I guess, from what I remember from Awakening. I mean, they're all amazing. You can't go wrong with any of them. So really, yeah, really like it.
I think
it sounds like you agreed.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, and it is challenging. I had the difficulty on hard to start with, because that's what I beat Awakening on. I beat Awakening on hard with the permadeath on, and I was feeling awesome about myself. It took a while. Took some restarts. I'm a tryhard, apparently. But I built up a great army, and after a while, it actually wasn't as challenging as you might think. Once you just have to put in a lot of legwork, a lot of grinding to get to that point. But with this one, there's a couple things. One, knowing that there's 3 full games with full stories, full armies to recruit and build up, I've got a lot of game ahead of me with Fire Emblem over the next few months. Do I really want to play this one so meticulously and on such a high difficulty level that I have to restart whenever one of my, not even just favorite, but really important characters dies off? I don't know. And do I want to turn off permadeath? Personally, no, I don't. I like having permadeath on. So I went ahead and lowered the difficulty down to normal, where my guys are now hitting a little bit harder and the enemies aren't killing me in 1 or 2 shots like they were on hard. I basically had to make it so I wasn't getting hit at all. And those battles were really, really hard. So it wasn't as fun. It wasn't as fun. So I backed it down to normal, and I'm having a lot more fun with it now. So is that what you're playing on, is normal?
Yeah, I played on normal.
Yeah, so I'm happy
with that
decision.
I'm trying to find the cheat code to put it on easy.
Yeah, baby mode.
Yeah.
Yeah,
but I haven't found it yet.
So Fire Emblem Fates, I really love it. I actually have brought it in my computer case a couple times to work, hoping to sneak in a little bit of playing time during lunch break. It hasn't worked out yet, but it's been with me the last several days. So when that time comes, it will be glorious. All right, so my 4 in February isn't really a legit 4 in February.
It's fake.
So it is fake. I have completed 4 games this month. But they are not all backlog games. Technically, only 3 of them are, if you go really technically. So are there games that I bought before this month that I hadn't had a chance to get to yet? Life is Strange, Ori and the Blind Forest, and Fire Emblem Awakening. Those are 3 games that I completed this month that were purchased and in my possession. I owned them before February. Now, I've been told that since I kind of just purchased Ori and the Blind Forest right at the end of January, that doesn't really count. I kind of agree with that. But for my purposes, and for my sanity, and for wanting to feel good about myself, I'm going to go ahead and count Ori and the Blind Forest, Fire Emblem Awakening, Life is Strange. Those are 3 games that I've completed. I have completed Firewatch, but I will concede that game came out this month. It is also a very short game, so it's not even a backlog game. But that was a nice diversion for an evening or two. I did really, really like Firewatch. So my 4th game for 4 in February I am working on right now, and that is Rise of the Tomb Raider, although it is being interrupted currently by Far Cry Primal.
How are you going to focus on that?
I don't know. Rise of the Tomb Raider is a beautiful game. I love Lara Croft. Let me just talk about this for a minute. It plays really well. I don't know how it won. I guess it won for writing. It didn't win for story, because the game tells me I'm 15% complete.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm into the game. I'm not super far, but I'm into it. I've upgraded some things, and you know, I've got a gun now. So I mean, I'm moving along. I've already finished 2 tombs. So I've got some experience in it, enough that I feel like I can speak to it. I feel like The Rise of the Tomb Raider is a phenomenal game. It deserved all the praise that it got. But I also feel like, I don't know how else to say it, I feel like I've played this game before. And the reason that I say that is not only because of the first Tomb Raider reboot, so it feels very familiar because of that, but it also feels familiar after just having played through all the Uncharted games, specifically 2 and 3. So I played through Uncharted 2 and 3 over the last few months. I did play the reboot of Tomb Raider about 1.5 years ago, 2 years ago. And so now playing this one, as sharp as it looks and as great as Laura's character is, I was really hoping for, I don't know what I'm hoping for. I'm not disappointed by it at all, but it just hasn't excited me, or it hasn't made me go, wow, I've never seen this before, like the other games did. It had a great opening with the ice climbing and your friend Jonah, and I mean, very intense, very cool. But on the other hand, the game really wants me to care a lot about this mission that Laura's on. You know, it keeps having these flashbacks to her and her dad, and there's reasons that she's doing what she's doing and trying to find what she's trying to find. And it's one of the first times in a game like this that I find myself going, I just don't think her reasoning for any of this is very good. She seems strangely obsessed with this thing that still hasn't been explained super well to me, the gamer, the one experiencing this. I couldn't even tell you exactly what it is that I'm doing and why she's so desperate to complete it, other than it's something that her dad wanted.
Well, and I now think she one wants of to the complete. Big things that she's wanting to do is clear her dad's name. He basically died a lunatic, and so she wants to clear his name. So I found that to be reasonable. All right,
well, I guess I didn't pick up on that. I guess I didn't pick up on him being a lunatic.
Yeah, he was considered crazy. Everybody wanted him to give up because I believe, and I'm not going to go into detail, but what he was searching for was fake, not real. And
okay. I must have missed that. Maybe that was an early story point that I missed.
You might. You had to have passed that.
Yeah.
But I would imagine you've seen it. If you haven't, it's coming up. But there's a cutscene that will kind of explain it.
I mean, there were some cutscenes where he was angry about something, and she's a little girl telling him to please stop or whatever. So they keep doing these flashbacks where I'm seeing her as a little girl interact with her dad, and things are getting more and more tense.
I will say this. The game is way better than the reboot when it comes to story and characters.
Okay. So yeah, I couldn't tell you the story of one either. So
yeah, I mean, I know the story, but that's only because I played it 5 times. But it's it was not why I played the game. I played the game because it was just fun to play. I personally feel like the reboot was, I enjoyed playing it more as far as gameplay. But I like the story, the characters, the world, and everything more in the new Tomb Raider Rise.
And
like I said in the last podcast, it's one of those where it's like, I need to experience it another time, maybe even 3 times total, before I can go, okay, this is better than the reboot. Because
yeah, that makes sense.
How much I like the other one.
Yeah, I think I need to... I probably need to just focus on this game. Maybe part of the reason I missed some of the story beats of why she's doing what she's doing had a lot to do, and I blame Nintendo, because of Fire Emblem Fates when it released. I was trying to play through that, and then I would pause, like, you know what, I gotta play some Rise of the Tomb Raider. I want to play it. It's one of my 4 in February. I want to get to it. But in my mind, I'm just thinking, but you could play Fire Emblem. So I think sometimes you just want to play something else, but for some reason there's a little bit of an obligation or a desire to play something else. A desire. And so Rise of the Tomb Raider is... it's one of those games I don't think I'm giving it its fair due. I think I need to pause everything else and just focus on that. But
I think you should play what you want to play. So if you're really into Fire Emblem and Far Cry, play those now and then come back to Rise and give it its fair shake. I think you'll walk away from it really enjoying it and getting to know you the way I have. I feel like it's the type of game that you'll walk away going, oh, now I get why Derek and all these other guys really enjoyed this game.
Okay.
Because as it plays out, it's not like the story's not predictable or anything. It's just how they do everything. It's really well done. So it's definitely... I think I ended up putting it number 2 on my top 10 of last year, but then I said I really wish I put The Witcher there. So it's top 3 for me for last year. That's definitely a quality.
Which is significant, because in my opinion, last year was one of the best gaming years in a long time. So that's pretty significant.
I think you should play what you want to play. You just got Far Cry Primal. It's a great game. I think it's a good game. Play that. Play Fire Emblem when you're not in the mood to be on your PS4, or when you can't be on your PS4. And then come back to Rise of the Tomb Raider later on. And always, always play Rocket League.
Always play Rocket League. Yeah, we'll talk about Rocket League later. Sorry, everybody who doesn't want to hear about it.
Frank Clark, tune in. Rocket League.
I do want to make sure it's very clear. There's nothing about that game that I could point out as a negative yet. I haven't played it enough. I just personally struggled to see the desperation in her desire to go after whatever she was going after. I think it's just because I'm distracted with other games and other just personal life stuff going on. I think when I get a chance to settle down and really focus on it, I think I'll really enjoy it. I think you're right. It is a game, the kind of game that I typically have right at the top of my list. I loved Uncharted. I loved the first Tomb Raider. I really do like this kind of game. So, the bow combat, the stealth and the hunting already in Tomb Raider, I really do enjoy it. It's top notch. It's fantastic. Mm-hmm. And maybe that's another reason is that Far Cry Primal came out. It's in a fresh setting I've never played before. And it's doing a lot of the same things, at least in terms of the side stuff that Tomb Raider's trying to do. You know, the stealthiness, the hunting, using a bow and arrow. Maybe that's part of it, too, is that there's two games that even though one's first person, one's third, there's still maybe some similarities there in some of the stuff that really hooks me on those games. Who knows? Maybe that's part of the issue. All right. So that's what I'm playing. It's been a busy couple of weeks of games. It's been a great year already for games, for me at least. I've really enjoyed the stuff that's dropped. So speaking of things that are coming out this year, they're going on this year, we've got some news headlines to get to. We've got 14 news headlines to talk about. Some of these we can just read and kind of acknowledge that they happened and move on. And some of them I think are worth us talking about because they're going to be some games and some announcements that we care about. So instead of having us pick, I'm just going to read right through them all. And yeah. I want to see what you think about some of these in particular, especially the Pokemon one, because I know you love Pokemon.
Yeah, I love Pokemon.
Yeah, you do.
Crappy.
All right, so here we go. The first headline, Carmageddon Max Damage has been announced for the PS4, Xbox One, and PC, coming out sometime in 2016. They're saying the PC version will come out in the spring, and the console versions perhaps later. They're not really positive on that. It will feature career mode, repair system, and online multiplayer. And if you get it for the PC, then you will get their latest Carmageddon game called Reincarnation. If you already own Reincarnation, you will get this one for free. You will get Max Damage for free. So if you already own a PC and you own, check out your Steam library or wherever you keep all your games, probably Steam library. If you have Carmageddon Reincarnation, then you will have access to Carmageddon Max Damage for free when it releases. So make sure you keep an eye out for that. All right, so there you go, Carmageddon. Is that a game you've ever played? Is there any interest there for you?
I've never played it, but isn't it kind of like a Twisted Metal?
Yeah,
if it is, then I would be interested.
Yeah, it's like a full-on damage demolition with vehicles kind of a game. Yep.
Well, now that I'm a PC owner, I will definitely check it out.
All right, so that's coming soon. Speaking of games that are coming soon, we are going to find out more about this. By the time this goes live, we will have all found out whether or not Nintendo made an official announcement on Pokemon or not. But for our purposes, it looks like a trademark leak has revealed possibly the next two Pokemon games called Sun and Moon. The night before their big direct, which is tomorrow on Friday the 26th, is coming. And it's going to be a Pokemon-focused direct from Nintendo. Now, Derek, I know you're not the biggest Pokemon fan, so I will just say, give you my prediction on this. I think these are going to be Nintendo 3DS games. I think they'll be the last major 3DS first party game from Nintendo before they move on to their next portable device, whether that's NX or something else.
I mean, it would make sense that NX is going to be a handheld combo with a console. So if that's true, then yes, I would agree.
Yeah, and I think
hopefully we'll hear something soon.
Yeah, we'll find... Oh, man, NX. I hope we find out about NX soon, because I'm tired of the speculation and the guessing. And
yeah, it's good.
Yeah, I want to be excited about a Nintendo hardware system again, but I am excited about their software still. And so the Pokemon games, possibly called Sun and Moon, whether they're a remake or a remaster of an older Pokemon game, remains to be seen. But if they are indeed brand new games, then I like the idea of Sun and Moon. It's kind of cool. It's fine. X and Y worked fine too, as simple as that was. I do enjoy some Pokemon. It is a very addicting, very satisfying, family-friendly RPG game. So I like the Pokemon game. So we'll find out more soon. All right, let's talk about a game that we never talk about, Rocket League.
No, I've never heard of it.
There's two pieces of news with Rocket League. The first one is in an interview with Colin and Greg on Colin and Greg Live Show. Jeremy Dunham from Psyonix revealed that Rocket League is getting a physical release in stores for each platform. Now, I imagine that just means PS4 and Xbox One. I don't know. Do people make physical copies of PC games anymore? I don't know.
They do. It's just, it wouldn't make sense for them to do it here.
Yeah, so at least for the consoles, they'll be coming out.
Yeah.
More details are coming soon, but it sounds like something that has been agreed on, but they don't have anything in terms of a release date or anything like that, if it's going to include any extra content. So there's no details there other than it's going to be coming to your store shelves, which is cool. I think it's great. It's a great way to get more exposure for one of the better games of last year.
One of the better games of all video games.
Yeah, no, you're not wrong about that.
No, I'm not.
Let's talk about this Rocket League announcement that has me super pumped. I couldn't believe it when I saw it. I was very excited. Their next DLC pack has been announced, and it's coming out next week on March 8th, a few days from when this goes live. And it's called the Batman vs. Superman DLC pack. And it's going to include the Batmobile vehicle, several different flags and other aesthetic things for Batman, Superman, and Wonder Woman. And it's launching for $2. So for $1.99, you can have this on March 8th.
Yeah, that's super sweet. I was actually worried when I saw it. Not that I wasn't excited. Of course I was excited. But I was like, that's Batman. It's probably going to be a $5 DLC.
Right, because it's licensed.
Yeah,
right.
I figured DC would make them pay more. But no.
Yeah.
$2.
Yeah, I was surprised because I think the DeLorean pack was
$2 too.
Was it $2?
Yeah, it was $1.
Well, there you go. And good timing, of course, with the movie coming out here in a few weeks. But yeah, that's great. I'm excited for that. The Batmobile looks really cool, and it fits right in with the other kind of glowing, really cool-looking Rocket League cars. So go ahead and pick that up, everybody. Support Psyonix. They are awesome. That's going to be on PC, PS4, and Xbox One. All three systems get that DLC pack on the same day. So there we go. Rocket League. You still playing Rocket League?
No, I uninstalled it.
That's too bad.
I thought it was horse crap. Yeah, I've been playing it actually a good amount with my son, so I'll drop his name on here. He always tells me, why do you talk about Eli, but you never talk about me? And I'm like, well, because you never play games. But actually on Monday, this past Monday, my son Ian was sick, and I had a bad back. So I kind of just decided, well, you're not feeling real well, and my back's killing me. Let's just both stay home.
And, right.
And we did some...
Good choice.
I mean, we did some resting, and we did some cleaning. Like, I had to clean still and do some chores, even though my back was killing me. But we got to spend most of the day playing Rocket League. And it was pretty cool because I was able to basically train him. He's still learning, but he's pretty good. Got to the point where we had played a few hours. We'd won the season mode twice. One time on pro, one time on all-star.
Nice.
And he was scoring. I mean, it was mainly me, and I'm not saying that to, like, brag, but, like, there's a point to me sharing that. It was mainly me in the season scoring. So I was a little tentative about going online because he's like, Dad, let's play online. We've already beat the crap out of all the, you know, the levels of difficulty in the game. And I'm like, yeah, I beat the crap out of all the levels of difficulty. But I was like, all right, well, let's give it a shot. So we played one match, and we won. I think we came back and won that one.
Nice.
And he was actually the MVP.
Hey!
I think we were down 3-2, and he scored the last two goals. He ended with... out of our four goals, he ended with three goals, and he won the MVP of the match.
All right, Ian.
I was in complete shock. So
nice.
That was pretty cool. And then we played the other night, four matches in a row, and we won all four of them. We forced two teams to forfeit, because one match was like 7-0, and the other one was like 5-0. I mean, we were just killing it.
Now, you're playing this on Xbox with him, right? On the Xbox
One? Yeah, okay. So the competition, okay. I will say this, as somebody who owns PS4 and the Xbox One, the competition on the Xbox One is way, way weaker right now than the PS4.
Definitely.
Which is understandable.
Definitely.
There are some good players on the Xbox One that you can tell, either they're naturals at the game or they've played it on PC or PS4 before. Mm-hmm. Kind of like me, I'm pretty good on the Xbox One because I've played a lot on the PS4.
Right.
So it's been real easy to just boost my stats like it's nothing.
Right.
But still, he's 9 years old. He doesn't fully understand this stuff. I still get yelled at by both him and Eli because they think they know everything. Dad, you wouldn't miss these shots if you would use, you would stop using ball cam. And I'm actually trying to train him how to use ball cam. I'm like, right. No, you actually need to use it. Not all the time. I switch back and forth. But I use ball cam a lot just to know where the ball is because I notice he likes to drive around and he has no clue where the ball is. But, yeah, it's been super fun. Loving the fact that it's a game that I can share with him. Eli's been begging to play it too, so we'll definitely get him on there. One thing I will add before we switch on to the next story. I think my boys are Xbox because I've owned Rocket League on the PS4 for about 7 months. And they played a little bit. They would watch me. But they never got into it. As soon as I got it on the Xbox One, it's every single day, and I'm not exaggerating. Can we play Rocket League? Can we play Rocket League? Can we play? And I'm like, you know, I've owned this game for 7 months. Yeah, we know, Dad, but it's on Xbox now. So I think I've got a couple of little Xbox.
I'm pretty sure that my kids are console agnostics because I can get them equally excited for Rocket League on the PS4, or we've been playing a little bit of Lego Marvel Super Heroes on PS4. They are equally entertained by Ori and the Blind Forest, or Rocket League, for that matter, on the Xbox One, or I played a few other games on the Xbox One. And of course, the Wii, they're just as happy with that one, playing Mario, or they still have fun with things like Wii Fit and Wii Sports. So yeah, so far, still kind of agnostic in terms of systems. It's all about the games. About the games.
You would think that's how my sons would be, but no.
Well, Ian, I got to say, man, props to you, buddy. Good work on showing up your dad on Rocket League already. That's fantastic. Nice.
I mean, nice just job. So you know, I appreciate your kind words, but he'll probably mock you for saying that.
Okay.
He's about as nice as Eli.
All right. Well, Ian, whatever. That's fine, dude. You're awesome. Say what you need to say. It's fine. I'm used to it from your dad. Like, I'll try to compliment your dad, and he'll still throw me under the bus for something.
Just tell Ian that he's garbage. Ian, you're garbage.
It's fine.
You're being carried by your father.
It's fatherly encouragement right there.
Yeah, you're garbage.
In March, the Xbox games for gold will be Sherlock Holmes, Crimes and Punishment for the Xbox One from March 1st to March 31st. And then Lords of the Fallen will begin on March 16th. And run until April 15th. So those are your Xbox One
games. Is that right? It's going all the way through April 15th?
Yeah, so what they've been doing for the Xbox One, at least, is they've been running them for full months, but one of them runs for that full month itself. The other one goes from mid-month to mid-month. They did that last month, too.
Did they? I didn't even notice. Maybe it's because I just bought it right away.
Yeah, so once March 1st hits, then one of the games will swap out, and I can't remember offhand which one it is, and Sherlock Holmes Crimes and Punishment will replace it, and then on the 16th of March the other game will swap out and Lords of the Fallen will take over for the next 30 days. And for the Xbox 360, and I'm assuming probably for backwards compatibility as well,
yes,
Supreme Commander 2 will be coming out for the first half of the month, so pick that up during March 1st through 15th. That is a strategy game that I've heard great things about. It's reviewed amazingly well, so check out Supreme Commander 2. And then the original Borderlands is coming for the second half of the month, March 30th. I'm sorry, 16th to 31st.
Yeah, that's the great thing about these games, that anything that comes out on the 360 is automatically is backwards compatible.
So yeah, there you go. Xbox gamers, you've got some... I don't know anything about Sherlock Holmes. I have not played Lords of the Fallen. I have heard great things about Supreme Commander 2. And I can tell you from experience that the first Borderlands is a good game, although far inferior to its sequel, Borderlands 2. But it still is a good game.
I absolutely love the first Borderlands.
Yeah, it is good.
It's one of my favorite games on the 360.
It is good.
It's free, so go get it. I did like 2 more, but I love the original.
Yeah, I think it's got a special place. I think 2 took everything to the next level, everything in that from Borderlands 1. But Borderlands 1 was a very unique, original experience when I first played it. So
I wish And I know they don't have to be the exact same, but I really wish Microsoft would just do it how Sony does it, and that's just release all the games on the same day and yeah. just let them sit there for a month.
I agree. I guess if you want to look at it from perhaps a strategic standpoint, this is one way that they can, number one, not quote-unquote lose as many games to a free download, but more importantly, it keeps their shoppers essentially coming back to their store more often to see what's the new game now for this half of the month. So you're going to get people frequenting the online store a lot more often if they have to come back to download the second half of the month game. So I'm with you as far as, you know, from the customer standpoint, it's a little bit inconvenient. But from their standpoint, I could see them wanting to get people to come to the store more often. So
yeah, I get that.
Well, speaking of how Sony does things, let's see what their PS Plus games for March are. Starting on March 1st, which is coming up very soon. If you're listening to this when it first releases, it's pretty much tomorrow or the next day. You're going to be able to get access to one game in particular that I'm very excited to finally play, and that is Galaxy for the PS4. Can't wait for that one. I've heard so many. It looks really, really awesome, and I've heard great things about it. So Galaxy coming for the PS4. Be sure to grab that one. The next game for the PS4 was one that the community voted for. They had a choice between, I think we talked about these, Action Hank, the Cactus one, Assault Cactus, something or other, and then the one that won was Broforce. So Broforce, unsurprisingly, won the vote. So that'll be free. I think the other two, though, will be on discount. So check those out if you still wanted those. I think 30% off for the month.
Yes.
So there's your PS4 games. For PS3, if you're still rocking a PS3, then you're going to want to grab Super Stardust HD and, is that right, The Last Guy? The Last Guy.
Sounds,
I have no idea what that is.
Sounds like a legit game.
Yeah, The Last Guy. And then for the Vita, Flame Over and Reality Fighters. So three games there, The Last Guy, Flame Over, Reality Fighters. I don't know anything about any of those games, so I apologize if you're looking for a recommendation.
Yeah, I don't know anything.
Broforce looks hilarious and pretty fun, so check that one out. Galaxy got a lot of chatter during the awards time of the year, although it was a very crammed year, so it wasn't going to win too much. But a lot of people love Galaxy, so make sure you check that out. And, of course, Super Stardust HD, it's classic. It's a great game. If you like arcade shooters, go for it. All right. Derek, what are your thoughts on, just real quick, not only the Xbox games with Gold, you kind of talked about those, with the PS Plus games. I've seen some conversations recently talking about, specifically with PS Plus, people being overall dissatisfied with the game selection for this service. Give me just kind of an overview. How do you feel about the games with Gold, but then more specifically, the PS Plus? Do you like the way they're rolling games out, their game selection? Are they missing it here? What do you think?
I mean, you'll never see me really complain. I'll make my comments and my opinions because most people know how I feel about indie games in general. I'm not saying all indie games suck, but I'm not a big fan of most indie games. So, I'm not a big fan of the PS Plus games generally. Obviously, there's some classics like Rocket League that stand out and will probably be the best game they've ever released for me, but I don't personally, I don't pay for PS Plus or even Xbox Live for the games. I look at those as bonus. I get the whole argument, well, they're not really free. They're not really free. Technically, that's part of the service that you are paying for, but they're really, really cheap. Let's put it that way.
Right.
They're extremely cheap. So I don't get upset over them. I don't put a lot of weight into them. And I've always found that I rarely put a lot of time into free games. Of course, Rocket League being the exception. I mainly focus on games I buy. So because I buy a good amount of games, I don't really have time for free games. I also don't like little generic games. I know you're excited about them, so I'm not knocking them or trying to be cool. I just don't care about stuff like Galaxy. Like, I don't look at that and go, I need that game. So when I see people that will make posts or make comments on websites complaining about these games, I feel like their arguments are extremely valid, but that's obviously they're putting more weight into it than I am.
I just get upset because I see them most of the time get met by many, many people that just basically demean them or make them feel like they're idiots because they don't like, and I'm doing quotations, indie titles.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so that's my issue. I feel like Xbox does a better job of trying to, and yes, generally they are older games. Like Sherlock Holmes came out probably over a year ago. Lords of the Fallen came out, I think, a year and a half ago. So these aren't like games that came out 3 to 6 months ago, which you wouldn't expect that even for any game.
Right.
The games that we get launch day on these type of service are generally the indie games because mm-hmm. they're lower budget titles. Most of the time they wouldn't get, I don't think Rocket League would be as big as it is today if it wasn't for them making the smart decision to make it a PS Plus game. I think it would have sold good. I think word of mouth would have been fine. I just don't think it would be what it is today.
It's a pretty big mega hit right now because of its position.
I think it really, really blew up. And I know they've released numbers for that game in particular, and I don't even think those numbers include what they get from Sony. So that game...
Oh, that's true. That's a good point.
Yeah. I think they really blew up making a good decision. So you do get with indie titles, you do get games that sometimes they launch and you get them free. So that's pretty cool. But I think the major issue that I see on the internet is a lot of people just so sick and tired of constantly getting these little titles. And I agree. To me, there's no reason why Sony can't release Killzone or Knack or something along those lines that's over 2 years old. They're Sony-owned titles. So it's not like you have to pay out a lot to release your own games for free on your service. So I don't really understand why they haven't gone out of their way to do that. They've released a few games. Some people consider First Light a AAA game. I don't. I consider it a AAA experience.
It's an expansion or a spinoff of a AAA game.
But it was a smaller experience. Definitely. It was not a AAA game.
Yeah, I finished that one really quickly, yeah.
Yes, and then Injustice is another game that Sony gave us a while back, probably almost a year ago, maybe even longer. So they have released a few, but overall, when they're releasing the titles that they're going to give away for free, I already know they're going to be small titles, and I'm like, I don't really care.
I mean, they've released a few bigger ones, let's say, on the PS3, right? Or am I misremembering? I feel like they've put out a few bigger games on the PS3.
Yeah, and that's the issue, is you've got a lot of people, if you follow Sony, then you know with PlayStation 3, they released a ton of AAA titles. Some of them, again, older, so a lot of people owned them, but still, they were releasing a lot of games. And there was plenty of people, I know plenty of people that were like, oh my god, they just gave us Bioshock Infinite? Oh my gosh, I've never played that, I wanted to play it. So there's still a ton of people that don't buy AAA games when they first release, right, and don't buy them a year, 2 years later, but if you give it to them for free, they'll play the game.
Right.
So I really think they should do a better job of that and mix it up more like Xbox. But overall, I'm just going to give you my opinion. I don't think it's a big deal either way. I think both services offer what I want. I get online. I get free games. Some of them I care about. Most of them I don't. And I get discounts on their already discounted games. Hmm. So, like, if, for instance, I think they're doing one now where it's an actual PS Plus sale. Now, they have other sales going on right now on the PSN store. But they actually have a PS Plus sale.
And I think that runs right up until, I think, the day after this releases. So if you're listening to this right after we post it, then go check it out right away.
Yeah, so they're doing that, and then they give you an additional 10% off all regular sale games normally. So stuff like that already pays for my service.
Yeah.
It's just the issue is, and I think what you were trying to get at, is you'll see a lot of arguing on the internet, Facebook, any pages, IGN, anything, where any type of article has to do with this. There are tons of people that support indie games. They understand it's not a genre. It's just how games are being published. So you get a bunch of different styles of games, and they love indie games.
Right.
But what those people lack the understanding and misinterpret is they think anybody who doesn't like, and again I'm doing quotation, indie games, only likes AAA games and they're dumb Call of Duty fans. And that's not who I am. That's not who a lot of the guys I've talked to who prefer AAA titles. I will play an indie game, but overall my preference is I like my games to be big. I like the experience to be huge. I like what AAA games offer. I don't give a crap about a game like Galaxy. That's boring. That's like a game, while it might add something to it, if it looks and feels like a game that I've played 20 years ago. And those games don't interest me. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah, I think and that makes a lot of sense. I can see why people would be disappointed with it, if nothing else, because most of the games that you see come out on PS Plus month after month, they're not necessarily games that most people, or like, I shouldn't say most, a lot of people would consider if they saw them in a store. If they saw it online in the digital store or in an actual brick-and-mortar store, most of these are games they would skip right past. So to be told, you have access to these free games, like, yeah, but those aren't games that I would normally care about anyway. Now, you could make the argument, you know, this will help broaden horizons for those who wouldn't normally play them. It'll help with exposure for smaller titles. I agree with those things. That's very true. But I can see that after month after month after month of everything from, you know, Grow Home to Galaxy to some of these smaller games. I think they put out Grim Fandango, which is really cool, but not for everybody. They've got a selection of games that I could see how it could frustrate someone who is saying, yes, but none of these are games that I would normally look at. There's so many to choose from. So I could see the frustration there. I will say this, though. Over time, I have thought less and less about, is this AAA or indie or somewhere in between? Mm-hmm. And I've thought more and more about, what have I read about or seen about this game? How's it reviewing? What are people saying about it? And does it sound like it'd be fun? So whether it looks like, you know, some pixel art, or whether it looks almost real, it's so beautiful, or anywhere in between, as long as the game itself is said to be fun and maybe it's in a genre that I'm interested in, or maybe the setting or the story is said to be good, or some gameplay mechanic hook that is being talked about, typically I'm excited for that. So Galaxy, I've heard about both in terms of style with its visuals as well as its unique gameplay, I've heard are great. So to me, I see that and I'm excited because that's one that I've always thought, I wonder if I should play Galaxy. You know, it's on sale, or maybe, you know, I'm just curious about it. Now I'm excited to play it. If you get something like, for example, Reality Fighters on Vita, maybe one of you is really excited about that because someone's been telling you about it. I've never heard of it. I don't know that I'll even bother downloading it. Like, I might if I turn on my Vita and you know, go over to the store and download it, but it's not one that I'm that excited about. So I can see both sides of the argument. I'm not convinced to give a game a try just because it's free necessarily. But on the other hand, I have really enjoyed a few of these games. There's usually at least one or two a month that I'm like, this is cool. Oh, this is a lot of fun. Like Never Alone, really liked that. Aru's Awakening, which I bashed for being too hard. It still was a very unique game I never would have played otherwise. I think we got Oddworld last winter, and I love the Oddworld games. Like you mentioned, First Light. We've gotten Rocket League. I want to say we got Limbo this past year as well. There's been a lot of really good ones that have been skipped by many people that now they have access to play. So I'm a little more on the positive side of it. Like, I think it's really cool, the selection that they have, but I can still see how people might be upset by it. Like, don't have another month of these games that I've never heard of or that I would never have bought normally that feel like small $5 or $10 experiences. And you know why I think that is? They feel like, to really get their value, it should be a game that at least at one point was a full $60 huge game, as opposed to these little games that I could already go buy this for $9 right now, you know?
Yeah.
So I think part of the reasoning, I think, is the value, kind of subconsciously even, doesn't feel like it's there when it's just these smaller games you can buy on sale for a couple bucks.
Yeah, I could see that.
So, all right, we'll move past that. But yeah, it's an interesting conversation that I've seen popping up quite a bit, especially this month with these games that have come out. It does seem like several months in a row now of smaller and smaller titles. Not bad titles, but just smaller ones. So kind of an interesting development there. Let's talk a little bit about an awkward moment between two major game developers. So the Uncharted 4 trailer was just released. Everyone's excited about it. It's getting everyone amped for the story of Uncharted 4. The game comes out in 2 more months. Looks amazing. Turns out that an employee at Ubisoft noticed that the artwork in the trailer that was in a painting on the wall in the trailer looked very familiar. So this Ubisoft employee tweeted, basically saying, it's kind of funny that Naughty Dog had to use our artwork. This is from Ubisoft. And this set off a frenzy of discussion and, of course, many jokes and many memes and a lot of interesting stuff. Sony ended up removing the trailer because the conversation kind of took maybe a mini viral spin and really got some exposure. And they replaced it with a new one that offers a different type of artwork in place of that one. So it was a really awkward moment there where Ubisoft, specifically the Assassin's Creed team, was calling out Naughty Dog for using what looked like one of their art assets. So Naughty Dog did issue an official apology about this now. It took a little while, but they did. So here's what they said. In our eagerness to get the story trailer out, we made a regrettable mistake and we did not thoroughly vet the artwork used for an in-game painting. We've already updated the trailer. We hold all artistry in high regard and take full responsibility for having allowed this to happen. We want to sincerely apologize to everyone at Ubisoft, the Assassin's Creed team, the original artist, and our fans. So that's their apology. Did you see what happened with this? What did you think about it? Is it that big of a deal to you? Did you see all this?
It wasn't a big deal to me. I was actually confused by it. I'm like, I don't understand why an Assassin's Creed photo is being used in their trailer. Like, it didn't make sense to me.
And I'll take a stab at it if you're curious what I think happened.
Yeah, go ahead.
I think as they're putting the trailer together, as they're building the assets for Uncharted 4, at some point, I mean, keep in mind, there's a lot of cooks in the kitchen. There are a lot of artists and developers that are putting together the game itself, but also even just the trailer. So when they needed to fill this painting, this frame that's in the Uncharted 4 world with some kind of artwork, it could have been something original their team put together. They also could have put some kind of placeholder that they found with a quick Google image search. Mm-hmm. I mean, it could have been from anywhere. So yeah, it could have been left over in some file from some kind of, for whatever reason, they had the Ubisoft artwork on file. I think it's much more likely that they found it online and used it as some kind of placeholder. Or maybe didn't even realize it was from another game. Maybe, again, they found it online and just grabbed it, copied and pasted it in there. It sounds like, and Naughty Dog seems to have acknowledged this, kind of some quasi-lazy work on the part of the people at Naughty Dog in order to just fill that painting instead of just doing their own original art. Now, I could be wrong about that, but my guess is it was meant to be as a placeholder, or whoever was responsible for it just thought, nobody will notice this. Like, it's just some image I found on the internet. Who cares?
Yeah.
So it's probably one of those two things. It was meant to be a placeholder, or whoever was responsible for that is now in big trouble for using some kind of image search to find something.
Yeah, it's just, it was a little odd.
So that's what I think happened. But it was definitely odd.
But not a big deal to me.
All right, so you were a Xbox gamer. Did you ever play a game called Postal?
I did not.
So Postal Redux is coming to PC and PS4. Players fight back with a destructive arsenal as they make their way through a kill-or-be-killed psychological thriller, a statement said. There will be a rampage mode that features a scoring system that increases a scoring multiplier for every kill and a kill streak. This is one of the more ultra-violent, crazy games that released in the last couple decades. There's been a few other games in the franchise, but really the original Postal is the only one that's considered by many to be worth your time. It was a kind of overhead isometric perspective and is very violent. I mean, think a little more realistic, of course, than something like Hotline Miami, but think that level of violence in terms of like just the blood and all that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. So this one's returning to that view. Postal 2 went with an FPS, first-person shooter route, and it was not all that well received. Postal 3, which I don't really know much about, except to know that it was very poorly received. But here's one of the funniest pieces of learning more about the Postal franchise. In 2007, famed filmmaker and artist Uwe Boll, I think that's how you say his name, he made what is considered by everyone to be a horrendous movie adaptation of Postal. And he's one of these guys, if you've seen any of his movies, he's one of these guys who refuses to admit that his movie might not be fantastic. And he loves all the work that he does. And he tried a Kickstarter to do a sequel to Postal, and it horribly failed. No one wants a sequel to your awful movie. So anyway, Postal Redux, or Redo, however you say that properly. I apologize if I butchered that. That is coming to PC this spring and PS4 later this year. So there you go. Get your violence fixed, Derek.
I'll probably pass, but maybe not.
Well, I don't think...
I do like blood.
I don't think you'll pass on this next one.
Yes, let's talk about
Remedy has trademarked Alan Wake's Return, and they registered a domain name with that same name. No other details are available, but we do know that they've registered a trademark as of just a couple days ago, and the domain name is also registered and being occupied. I don't think by any content yet, but it is taken. So, how does that strike you, Alan Wake's Return?
Well, I mean, I won't say I'm real excited because obviously right now they're in the process of releasing Quantum Break, so I imagine this is pretty far out, but it's just exciting to know that a sequel is on its way. It's one of those games, I played the original Alan Wake, I bought it the day it came out, beat it in the first week, and really, really enjoyed the game. And it's one of those where I didn't beg for a sequel, but anytime it's brought up, I'm like, oh yeah, I'd love to have another Alan Wake.
Yeah, well, and it's getting some more attention now that it's being included with Quantum Break, right?
Yeah, I think I was actually surprised by how many people haven't played Alan Wake that are actually Xbox gamers. But
I've never played it.
Yeah, there's several of you that own the Xbox 360 and have never played it. So I think for those gamers, getting Alan Wake with Quantum Break, if you buy it digitally, you have to pre-order, I should say that. Pre-order it digitally, you get a free copy of it. And you get all the DLC and Alan Wake's Nightmare?
Yeah, the American Nightmare, yep.
American Nightmare, yep. Which is like a separate game, but more of an arcade shooter. Cool. But all those are great titles. Highly recommend them. I'm a big fan of Remedy. I respect what they do. And can't wait for Quantum Break, like I said a couple weeks ago.
All right. Well, Alan Wake's Return, I doubt we'll hear too much specifically about it. I mean, maybe they'll mention it at E3, you know, since Quantum Break will be out. But I think more realistically, it'll be later this year, maybe next year. But it is, they've trademarked it, so something's happening at some point.
This next news story is actually one I'm really excited about.
Yeah, yeah. This actually got me excited, too. So it looks like BioShock the Collection has been officially rated for several systems in Brazil, including the PS3, PS4, Xbox 360, Xbox One, and PC. Again, there's been no official announcement of any kind, but seeing that it was officially rated and several news outlets were reporting this down in Brazil, it's one of those things that, you know, I think publishers and developers are trying to cover their bases and get things primed for some kind of release, and all it takes is one little leak for it to become breaking news before they can actually announce it. And of course, in this day and age, everything leaks.
Yeah.
So this to me sounds very legitimate. It sounds like something they should have already done. So it's cool that they are doing it. BioShock the Collection, I would imagine, will include BioShock 1, 2, and Infinite. That would be a great collection to have. I'd love to have that on my Xbox One or PS4. I'd love to play all three of those games again, really. So there you go. I know you're excited for it.
Yeah, I mean, BioShock is, I won't say that it's it's my favorite franchise. I mean, it's kind of hard because, you know, Mass Effect and Knights of the Old Republic are great too. But BioShock, big fan. I love the original BioShock. Infinite is better, in my opinion, has a better story. I wouldn't say the world's better, but it's up there with Rapture.
I do think that BioShock 1, there's no other experience I've had that's quite like the opening of that game. You know, from going down into the Rapture for the first time to like that voiceover, like the recording that's played for you and the clips that you're watching to kind of set up the stage a little bit for what you're about to experience, and then discovering that this place is abandoned or ruined or something, and then there's some kind of creepy, nasty, evil thing outside of your little pod that you're arriving in. I mean, the setting they set up for that is terrifying, and the atmosphere is amazing. And of course, the game turns into a really fun actual game to play. It's not just jump scares and trying to be spooky, although it kind of starts that way. Mm-hmm. It actually has a really interesting story, a cool twist. It's got just really great gameplay. I'm with you, though. I do think Infinite took it to the next level. I really enjoyed Infinite quite a bit. Bioshock 2, I can't even remember much about it other than it was more Bioshock.
But yeah, it was good. It just wasn't as far as stories or twists and characters or anything.
Yeah.
It wasn't.
Well, I loved 1 and I loved Infinite.
Anything Ken Levine touches is gold, in my opinion. So, he didn't touch
2. Yeah. Yeah, we're actually going to talk about Ken Levine here in a little bit. We'll talk about him here in a minute. All right, let's talk about Fire Emblem again. Fire Emblem Fates has set a franchise sales record in the U.S. In its first 3 days, it sold 300,000 units, which was 5 times more than Awakening sold over its first 3 days of being on sale. Amazing numbers. Yeah, that's fantastic. And that tells me that they're, I wouldn't be surprised for them to hit a million here very shortly, in very short order.
I mean, not only is that crazy, sorry to cut you off, but it's just really exciting because I really, really do love this franchise, and Awakening was seen as its final one, you know?
Right, yeah.
They expected
it was
to release it and then let the franchise die, and this is a franchise that's been around for a while, and Awakening surprised Nintendo with its success. So then they were like, well, okay, well, now we're going to keep this franchise alive. And for it to come out and do 300,000 units...
in 3 days.
5 times more than Awakening in the first 3 days.
Right.
Is crazy.
It is.
I think Awakening... I mean, maybe it hit over a million now, but I think for a while, it was only at, like... I swear I heard a report that the sales for Awakening was, like... 300,000, like a year or so after it's
been, yeah, I'm not sure the numbers. I do know that it sold surprisingly well. So for whatever their expectations were, they exceeded it with Awakening. You're right about that.
Yeah, maybe it was 500,000, but I know it wasn't, like, it was a good number, but it wasn't as high as this number is for 3 days.
Yeah.
And quality games, I'm hoping what this will mean is maybe we'll see not only more on handhelds, but I would love to see one on an actual home console.
Yep, and it looks like, according to their stats, that more players picked Birthright over Conquest. I believe that would probably have to do with tracking digital sales on their eShop as well as physical retail copies, which is no surprise. I mean, everywhere that I looked, when people were asking about it, Birthright is being touted as the easier entry point. And there's a lot of people who never played Fire Emblem who are just now trying it.
Yeah.
And Birthright is being touted as the more Awakening-like experience in terms of it's a little bit wider, really growing your army in a different way, whereas Conquest is a little more mission-based and very specific and a little harder. So I don't know if that's going to be completely true once I'm done with it. I feel like Conquest so far does feel like a pretty great, although standard, Fire Emblem game.
Mm-hmm.
I have not played Birthright yet, so I don't know the differences quite yet. But man... really, really good. It's great to see it. And I don't know if you've logged in recently, but I feel like every time I've logged in, there's been another little notice that says, hey, there's a new DLC available. So they're already putting out little map packs.
Yeah.
And DLC for this. So when you log in and you're at your little castle area, you have to get past chapter, I want to say 6, right into chapter 7. And that's when you decide, am I going Birthright or Conquest? And then you'll open up your castle, and you'll also open up an area called the Dragon's Gate. And that's where you can go and you can buy all the extra DLC. If you bought one copy of the game, you can go to the Dragon's Gate and buy the other copy as DLC for $20. So it's much cheaper, but you get full access to it. You can also buy Revelations there. That'll come out, I think, on March 10th. And then you can buy all the additional DLC they have. Everything, they're going to have everything from... old school Fire Emblem characters and old school maps to some new stuff, to some challenge maps. There's ways you can earn a ton of gold by beating certain enemies or grind your characters through XP bonuses. So their DLC, if it's anything like it was with Awakening, which was robust, then it's going to be really fantastic.
Yeah, so, when I picked up the special edition at GameStop, they tried to sell me on a map pack. And I laughed at the girl who was selling it to me, and she's like, what's so funny? I was like, I'm buying 3 humongous games and you're trying to sell me a map pack?
Yeah,
ain't nobody got time for that.
Yeah, they're already supporting it with DLC. And again, if they follow the path of what they did with Awakening, then we're looking at several weeks, if not several months, of ongoing DLC support. Nintendo just killed it with supporting Awakening with DLC. So I'm hoping the same thing happens with Fates, and I think it will. All right, if you guys own a 3DS, go get this game. Just do it.
Just do it.
Do it.
Do it.
All right, New World Interactive has announced Insurgency Sandstorm. It's a first-person shooter coming in 2017 to the Xbox One, PC, and PS4. It's published by Focus Home Interactive, which is a publisher that I have heard pop up quite a bit these days. This is the first time that New World Interactive has teamed with a publisher, because this Insurgency game began as a Half-Life 2 mod on Steam a long time ago. But now they're building it out. It's a brand new version of it. I believe they're totally improving the visuals as well, and maybe even the gameplay mechanics. But they're going to build it out with the story mode, and it takes place during the invasion of Iraq. They're also going to have a multiplayer as a major component of the game, because that's where it started, as a Half-Life 2 multiplayer mod. But the thing is, they are, and they specifically said this, they're developing the multiplayer with esports in mind. So to me, I hear that and I think, okay, they're focusing on balance, on a game that's fun to play, but is very competitive and balanced for whatever options they have in that game. If they have classes, if they have a whole bunch of guns to pick, it sounds like if they want esports involved, they're going to have modes and options that make sense for a balanced competitive game. And it will include split-screen multiplayer options. So, Insurgency Sandstorm, coming next year.
Sweet.
All right. Take-Two Interactive is coming to E3 in a big way, according to their CEO, Strauss Zelnick. So, he basically just came out and said, guys, we're coming to E3, and we're going to be there in a big way. We don't really...
Nice.
We don't know what
I didn't hear about this.
We don't know what that means yet, but to hear that Take-Two, one of the premier publishers in games right now, is coming in a big way, it's really exciting. From what I can tell, and correct me if I'm wrong, I believe there's only three games coming out this year that are confirmed from them. That is Battleborn, Mafia 3, and Civilization Revolution Plus 2, which I think is coming to Vita, and it's a long name.
Yeah, that's ridiculous. I think those are the three that are coming, which two of those three I care about. I actually pre-ordered Battleborn tonight, and Mafia 3 is definitely one I'm picking up day one.
Yeah, Mafia 1 I played on the PC back in the day, and it is really, really fun. It's like a little bit more focused Grand Theft Auto clone. It's nowhere near, at least the first one, was nowhere near the same open world setting. I heard the second one was good. I never played it, but Mafia 3, Mafia 3 looks cool. Think about all the different franchises under the Take-Two Interactive umbrella. For those of you who aren't familiar, that includes 2K and Rockstar franchises. Mm-hmm. So you could be looking at everything from a Borderlands 3, some sort of new Bioshock entry. You could be looking at Red Dead Redemption 2. And there's rumors, I don't know if they're confirmed or not, but there's been talk of Ken Levine teaming up with 2K again for a new game, a non-Bioshock new game. So, I mean, possibilities are endless. We always get ourselves overhyped. But if you could pick, let's say one, but if you want to sneak in and do two, that's fine. If you could pick one thing that you'd love to see as a major surprise at E3 from Take-Two Interactive, what would you want to see?
Well, the two things I'd want the most is a sequel to Bioshock and Ken Levine, whatever he's doing. I mean, it would be really cool if he was actually working on the next Bioshock. But if he's not, and I know he was in an interview not too long ago, actually, probably a couple months ago, describing his new game and how it was going to be open, I believe it's open world he described it as, and that it would be kind of like, it would play kind of like a Bioshock.
Yeah.
It was going to be heavy story driven, but it was still going to be a first person shooter. So it sounded really cool. So if that's what he's doing.
Yeah. I mean, it's kind of surprising. I mean, after Infinite, I know that things kind of fell apart with him and his basically relationship with 2K, I thought. And
I don't know if it's with 2K as much as it was just he took so long. I mean, it took like 7 years to release Infinite.
Yeah, and it went through a lot of changes over that time from what was first shown. Yeah.
I mean, he's kind of like Kojima. That's why, you know, we've had this conversation before. Everybody wants to blame Konami, but I do not think Kojima is innocent at all.
So you think Ken Levine has that same kind of perfectionist artist thing? Yeah,
guy where he's like, look, if I'm going to put my name on it, it's going to be exactly what I want. Mm. Which means he makes masterpieces, at least to me he does. And to a lot of people, I'm not alone. So that takes a lot of time to do, and time equals money. And when you're a big time publisher, like Take-Two and 2K and all them, you want things to come out a little bit quicker than 7 years.
Yeah, that's
because
true.
Infinite sold really well.
Yeah.
But compared to how much they invested, I think they either came out at a little bit of a loss, or it was even, or it was only a little bit of profit. Like, it wasn't like one big, huge loss, or it wasn't a big profit, but it was like one of those where it was almost like flat.
Yeah.
And so when you're a developer like that and you put all that time and energy into, or publisher too, to a game, you know, for 7 years, and you come out selling really well, but not well enough to cover what you cost, you usually cut ties at that point.
You know, this is super, super random, and I want to hear your other thing that you'd like to see from E3. But this is super random. I was listening to the Podcast Beyond interview with the developers of Firewatch over at Campo Santo. Mm-hmm. And it's a great interview. I recommend you guys all go listen to it. But don't listen to it unless you finished Firewatch, because it's completely spoiler-filled. But it is very good. It's very funny, too, like to hear them joke around and laugh about the development and the things that are hidden that some of them knew about and some of them didn't, which is hilarious. But it's really, really good. And one of the things they talk about is placeholder names for certain characters. And at some point, and I don't know if one of them worked on an old Bioshock game or even on Infinite maybe, but they talk about a placeholder name they had there forever for the main character in Firewatch was Blooker DeWitt. They added a little L in there, but they were talking about that so much. And it, of course, reminded me of Booker from Bioshock Infinite. But anyway, quick recommendation. Go check out that podcast if you've played Firewatch. And if you haven't played Firewatch, go play Firewatch. It's really good.
No.
All right, so what's the other thing you'd want to see besides Bioshock? Unless you already named it and I missed it.
Well, I said Bioshock and Ken Levine.
I see. That's right.
Red Dead, it was all right. I wouldn't go crazy, but I would be happy if we saw Red Dead 2.
I'm going to interrupt you right there and say that's the one that would make me most excited. And I know it's already been talked about, and it's rumored for whatever reason. I don't know if it's legit rumors. I got to say, I think Red Dead Redemption is the best Rockstar game, number one. And I would lose it if they actually had an official announcement, Red Dead Redemption 2 or Red Dead something, if they want it. Because they had Red Dead Revolver and then Red Dead Redemption. So maybe the next one will have a different, you know, Red Dead something. I would be so excited to finally see that thing is real, see some, maybe a trailer of it, or at least a gameplay clip, or, you know, a screenshot, something, and some sort of date range. Like, this is coming in 2017, or hey, this is our surprise fall release, or something insane like that would be just mind-blowing. I would love that. I don't really need anything Grand Theft Auto related right now. I think 5 kind of filled that Grand Theft Auto need for a while. So I hope that stays away, and I think it will based on their history.
Yeah.
I'd be interested to see something with Borderlands 3. I don't think it would excite me. A new Bioshock would excite me because Infinite was a great game, and I'd love to see where they go next. And I'd love to see some different creative minds taking over that and seeing what else they can do with Bioshock. There's a lot of good stuff they could do. Maybe Table Tennis 2 from Rockstar. Who knows? Could be anything.
Yeah, I would love Table Tennis 2.
Yeah, it's an open world ping pong game.
That's actually the one I email them about, like, weekly. Like, I'm constantly sending them.
Did they respond? Or?
Yeah, with silence. That's usually
that's usually what you want.
Yeah.
That's usually what you want.
But I think they hear my cries.
Well, it's going to be really exciting to see what happens at E3, specifically with Take-Two. So, yeah, we'll see when it happens. Resident Evil 4, 5, and 6 are coming to the PS4 and Xbox One this year.
Woohoo!
Are you pumped?
Yeah, we've talked about it in the past. Love Resident Evil.
Now, here's the release schedule's weird, though. So
it kind of makes Evil's, sense, though, to be honest.
Well, it does, I guess, if you think about when things were released, then I guess so. Because the one that's going to be most in demand is Resident Evil 4, and it's going to take the most work, I would imagine, to get it ready for the new console. So, it makes sense. But here's the release schedule. They're going to release Resident Evil 6 on the PS4 and Xbox One on March 29th. So that's coming out in about a month, which is great. That's cool that that's really soon. Resident Evil 5 then has a summer release date, with Resident Evil 4 listed as fall. So what do you think about them going backwards like that? Or does it really matter because these numbered entries aren't really sequels to each other? What do you think about that?
Well, I mean, like I said, it kind of makes sense because I look at 4 as the one that could be a little bit more difficult to bring to the Xbox One and PS4, even though they did re-release it on the Xbox 360 already and the PS3. But what I was going to say is, I think they're just doing this more because they're like, well, Resident Evil 4 is the more popular one. We would rather have that out in the holiday. That's when a lot of people buy games. Plus,
okay, that's a good point.
What they're going to probably do is release 6, 5, and then when 4 releases, they're going to also release a physical copy that has all three of them, and that will come out in the holidays.
Okay.
Okay.
Kind of a prelude to Resident Evil 7 being announced?
Yeah, I mean, that was actually what I was going to talk about when we were talking about Take-Two, and then I saw this was underneath it. Resident Evil 7 is probably, it's so hard for me to say the game I want to hear about, but if I had to name, like, it would definitely be in my top 5 announcements that I would want. Maybe Coder 3, Knights of the Old Republic 3 would be number 1, but definitely in the top 5 is I want to see something from Resident Evil. But I don't want to just see Resident Evil 7. We look just like 6, but we're just bigger and better and badder. I want to see a return to the franchise. So I would actually prefer not to see 7. I would like to see Resident Evil, and that's it. And then basically say we're rebooting the entire franchise.
Well, then, based on what we're seeing here with 4, 5, and 6 releasing over the next several months, really from now to the end of the year, would you at all expect any other Resident Evil entries to land in 2016?
No. I'm just hoping for an announcement at E3 to let me know it does exist and this is the direction that we're going in with it, because that's what's going to be most important. I think everybody can agree that Resident Evil 7 or another Resident Evil game exists. The thing I want to see is, what is it? Are you going back to your old school roots? Are you going to keep going down the path that you are going with 5 and 6? Because the biggest issue with 6, and we actually ended up talking about this today on Facebook in our Platinum Achievements group. The biggest issue with 6 is 6 didn't have an identity. 6 was literally trying to make everybody happy and ended up making very few happy at all. Because if you... Did you ever play 6?
No, I didn't.
Okay.
I played and beat 4. I played a little bit of 5, and I just wasn't digging it, and I never tried 6.
Ooh, 5 is a lot of fun co-op. 6 is basically... And I'm doing this by memory, so if I'm wrong, again, call me out. But,
angry video time.
Yeah, I know. 6 had 3 campaigns. I'm not going to remember everybody's name, but I know Leon Kennedy had 1 campaign. In my opinion, his campaign was the best because it was the most old school Resident Evil combined with new school. And when I say old school is more horror survivor. New school is more action, blow everything up.
Okay. Yeah.
Okay, so his was really well done. There were some really creepy parts in his. Chris Redfield had his own, which it kind of fit with how Resident Evil 5 was with Chris in it. They kind of went the same path where they're like, okay, we got Chris in this one, so it's going to be all about action. So I was okay with that, too. I enjoyed Chris's as well, because I knew what it was. And then the sixth one was, I want to say Jacob was his name. He was the son of, oh God, how are you forgetting his name? Oh, Jacob Wesker. So he was the son of a Wesker from the original Resident Evil games.
Mm-hmm.
And so you play him, and he had an interesting story. And he was supposed to be kind of a hybrid of Chris and Leon's. So he's supposed to be kind of a survival slash action. And because they did that, when you think about it, you feel like you're playing three separate games in one package. So it doesn't and they're all three supposed to tie into one. And it just didn't, it wasn't very satisfying. It fell apart. It really did. And they just didn't do a good job. I really wish they would have just said, hey, this is what Resident Evil is. Even if it was action. If they came out and just said, look, I know a lot of you want us to go back to our original Resident Evil roots. We're not doing it. This is who we are now. It just didn't have an identity. It was more like, we don't know what we are. So we're just going to try to make everybody happy.
So if you could pick Resident Evil 7, or like you said earlier, you know, just Resident Evil, which would you pick?
I would like to just see a reboot of the franchise. I obviously don't want a remake of the first one because they just released the remastered. And I don't really think they need to do that. But I think if they just kind of, I don't know, I guess you could call it Resident Evil 7, but I wouldn't be upset if they just did, this is Resident Evil, here's a whole new cast of characters, here's a whole new creepy environment, and we're just going to act like what we've released before didn't exist, even though we know it existed.
Yeah.
And I would like that.
And I think, just me personally, this is outside looking in here, because I'm not a big Resident Evil guy like you are, but I feel like in order to win over any kind of section of gamers without trying to compete with all the other open world things, you know, your Dying Lights and State of Decay, where you got a kind of an open world zombie setting, I still like the idea of close quarters, keep it confined, you know, some old hospital, some old mansion.
Yeah, you know, that's what I want.
Yeah, like it's all confined in that one area, and you know, you've got set of objectives, you've got a clear-cut story, it's very straightforward, lots of interesting and creative puzzles and some good combat. Like, that's what Resident Evil should be, in my opinion. I'd be really wary of them opening it up to become, to try to match up with all the other open world games that are floating out there.
Yeah, I know, open world games are becoming so common, but I don't think Resident Evil is one of those franchises that would ever need to go that direction.
I hope not. But you never know with the way 6 kind of, I thought, wasn't really what everyone wanted it to be, and I'm not sure how it performed in sales. Maybe it did great.
I don't think it did good. Like, I think it sold enough to cover and obviously make money so they could justify making another Resident Evil, but I think it was financially and critically a failure compared to previous Resident Evil games.
All right. Well, cool. Well, speaking of critics and how they receive games, let's talk about some of the recent game reviews to wrap things up here. We're going to look at 5 games that were recently released, and we'll just get an idea of Metacritic's overall ratings for them. So since we won't do a guessing game, you've already revealed that you pretty much always check in on these scores. So I just grabbed kind of the range of scores based on the different platforms for some of the big games. So Plants vs. Zombies Garden Warfare 2 has landed so far somewhere in the 81 to 82 range, depending on the system you're looking at. Have you played this game? Is this one that you've grabbed?
No. We talked about it last week. I bought the first one when it first came out. I enjoyed it, but I didn't keep it long. I actually ended up trading it in to get most of my money back. So it's a game I like, but it's not one, you know, you and I earlier in the show, we talked about how many games we have, how much crap we got in our backlog,
right?
How much stuff we feel like we should be playing, but we're really playing this game over here. This is just a game that I can no longer justify. It's one of those games where I'm still buying a lot of games, but I'm trying to make smarter decisions. So when I looked back at what I did, I think it was 2 years ago when the first one released. When I looked back at how I only played that a little bit, I couldn't justify buying this one.
Well, I will say this, for those of you with kids, this is a great recommendation. It's a fun game. It's very family-friendly. I mean, I guess you could...
A lot of people that love it. It's a great game.
Yeah, my kids love it. It's very cartoony. It's very colorful. It's pretty easy to pick up and play, so it's a good multiplayer game. I did play the first one with my kids for a little bit, on and off. I don't really have any interest in playing the second one right now. It's not a game that we as a family, like, it's not something that I hear the kids go, hey, let's play Plants vs. Zombies, whatever, the shooter game they used to call it. It's just not something that's up on our radar. That being said, if you're a fan of, let's say, family-friendly shooters, something in the vein of Splatoon, maybe, this would be a good one.
Splatoon is what comes to mind. I know you're not painting things, but you're still...
Yeah,
it's definitely a lot.
You're shooting like these colorful, you know, like pea pods and whatever else, like fruit and veggie pieces at these really dumb looking, fake looking zombies. There's nothing scary about it, in my opinion. No. I mean, I had my twins who are about to turn 5. They were watching it. They thought it was hilarious and fun. So I don't think there's anything as far as content goes to worry about. It's a good game. Check it out. If you haven't played the first one, especially, I recommend at least a rental of Garden Warfare 2, maybe from Redbox or something. Give it a whirl.
Yeah, it's a fun game.
All right, this other one is one that we talked about last week called The Flame and the Flood. It came out on Xbox One, which I didn't realize. I thought it was just PC, and it came out on PC. And it is currently reviewing as an 81 on Xbox One and 75 on PC. So that could be... it could just be, you know, that just that space between PC reviewers and console reviewers. Or it could be there's an actual issue with the PC version. But this was the Riverside roguelike we talked about, I think. I think that was this one.
Yes.
Yeah. Flame in the Flood. So
I think so.
Yeah, it looks pretty cool. Check that out if you're at all interested. It should be on the Xbox One store or Steam right now. Superhot is out on the PC, and it is averaging right now an 86 review score on Metacritic. And we talked about this also a couple weeks ago with kind of that old school, like, mannequin vibe. And I'm pretty sure, is this the one that everything stops when you stop?
Yeah. So
yeah,
it's a first person shooter that if you're not moving, nobody's moving.
Is it bullets involved too? Like everything's kind of freezes when you stop moving?
Yeah. So that was what was pretty cool, is I was watching like a video, and there was like probably 4 or 5 enemies in the room, and they're all around you. So when you stop, you can't see anything around you, but you know they're there.
So you can't even move the camera around while you're frozen.
And so then when you start to move again, you have to like plan your move before you do it, because once you move, that's generally when a bullet's coming at you. So I was seeing some pretty cool gameplay.
Yeah, if you're a PC gamer, go check out Superhot. I don't think it's too expensive there on Steam.
Yeah, it's $25, but if you go to greenmangaming.com, I think it's on sale for $22 plus 20% off, so you can basically get it for $18.
Oh, nice. Good recommendation. Nice. Green Man Gaming.
So cool. I think I'll go there.
All right. So Superhot, and one that I didn't put on here but I know is being talked about for PC, is called Devil Daggers. It sounds very challenging and very fun. It's kind of time-based, like how long can you survive? It's that one where you're throwing daggers around, so PC gamers, check that one out. I think it's only $5, so go check that one out too. The Walking Dead Michonne, speaking of adventure games we talked about a little bit earlier, it is a 3-part episodic game that's coming out from Telltale, and right now it is averaging right around a 69 on the PC, and the other versions have not received enough ratings to get a score yet. So it's just below that 70 range, kind of where I expected a spin-off adventure game series to land. It's too bad it's not higher, but...
The thing is with The Walking Dead, or I should say with Telltales, they're all about story experiences. Rarely will you hear somebody say, I bought this brand new Telltale game for the gameplay.
Oh, yeah.
And so I have trouble believing that in 3 episodes they can really put together a great story for this one character that you already know a lot about if you watch the show. Yeah. So that's why I was hesitant, because I did want to get it, but then I was like, well, it's only 3 episodes, and the reviews that came out for this one, actually, this is the funny part, they said it was fun to play, but the story was kind of weak.
That doesn't make any sense for a Telltale game. Fun to play. Huh.
That I had good games.
Well, it's one of those, I mean, I'm sure it'll be on some kind of sale. You know, get all three episodes for $4.99. That's when I'll grab it.
That's what I plan on doing. Yeah. I think I'm going to hold off. I've got plenty enough to play, now, but I will play.
Reviews don't mean everything, but if this Walking Dead Michonne spinoff had landed at like a 89 or like a 93, and it was everyone's like, this is amazing. Telltale went up to the next level with this game. It'd be hard to ignore it. But since it is kind of reviewing as a mediocre level Telltale episode entry, then I can wait. I'm interested, but I can wait.
That's pretty much how I feel.
Far Cry Primal is landing kind of right where I expected it to. It's between the 76 to 78 range across its multiple consoles. And yeah, to me, that's landing at a good game. Not amazing, not even great, but a good game. So far in my experience, I think it's closer to that great range. Just in my 3.5 hours of playing, it feels more like something in the 80s. But who knows? When it's all said and done, I might come back around and say, yeah, I wish that the characters or story or something else was there. I might come back to that and say 77 or so is the right range. But that's where it is right now. So go check it out if you're interested. It's not bad, that's for sure. It's a good game.
Yeah, if you're interested in Far Cry games, or I've heard people that were like, I didn't like Far Cry 4, but I really like Primal so far. So Primal is, while it's got a lot of similarities to Far Cry 3 and 4, it's also its own beast. Like, it plays pretty different.
Right, right. Yeah, so some good stuff coming out, and we are looking dead on at this month of March that's coming up as a huge month, one of the bigger months of the spring. There's a lot of stuff coming out in March. It's going to be exciting. And then, of course, comes April, which is a lot more big games. So we're on the precipice of an avalanche of games over the next few months. It's going to be very exciting. But we will talk about that in our next episode, and we will dig into the games of March, things you should be looking at, things that we're excited about. But we'll get into that next time. And also, Derek and I have been planning out a spoiler cast for Life is Strange. It's a game that both of us enjoyed, and we're going to really break it down in depth. So be on lookout for that in the very near future. We're going to go through, right now we're planning on going through chapter by chapter to talk about the main story beats as well as our big decisions that we made. So be on the lookout for a Life is Strange spoiler cast coming up soon. And don't forget to email us, fathersofthegrind@gmail.com. We want to hear from you. There's a good chance you'll be featured on the show. If you send us a note or something to talk about, we'd love to hear from you. So, Derek, as always, people have been loving hearing your words of wisdom. Close us out with some wise words, my friend.
Yeah, I mean, just live life, go in peace, flourish, and prosper.
Man, it just feels so good when you just let loose from the heart like that, you know?
Yeah, I mean, it took me probably a month to write that one.
Yeah, well, I loved it, and I know everyone else will too, so. All right, you guys, take care. We'll talk to you soon.
Who is your daddy?
I am the father.
You fathers will understand.
My father taught me many things here.
I got an idea. How about you all sit there quietly while I make dad noises?
By the way, I can still hear your dryer, but that's no big deal. It's no big deal.